The first week of jury selection has come to an end, but there are still empty jury seats in the jury box. Good evening. I'm Glenn Jones, and this is Canton Confidential, the Karen Reed murder trial. We have a lot to get to tonight, from one juror dropping out to potential DNA evidence found on the back of Reed's SUV. We have two experts in studio with us tonight to offer analysis and perspective. But let's begin with a quick recap. Karen Reed is accused of hitting her Boston police officer boyfriend with her SUV and leaving him for dead in the snow back in 2022. The body of Officer John O'Keefe was found the next morning outside the Canton home of a fellow Boston police officer, where the couple had been invited to attend a party following a night of bar hopping. Reed is now on trial for second-degree murder, but her defense team claims she's being framed by law enforcement. Now the trial is underway. Jury selection began Tuesday. Here's where things stand tonight. 12 jurors have been seated. Two were selected today, and one previously selected juror dropped out. More on that a little bit later, but right now the prosecution and defense have just four more seats to fill for alternates. In the meantime, new documents filed in court today. They could lead to new DNA evidence in the case. NBC 10's Kirsten Glavin has been reading through that paperwork. She joins us now to give us an update on what the court filings are and how jury selection is going. Kirsten.
Yeah, Glenn, all of this is a bit of an arduous process, but it is crucial to get it right. Now, today, we did see a much smaller jury pool than what we've seen over the past few days, with almost all of those potential jurors saying they were familiar with this case already.
Commonwealth versus Karen Reed, 12-22-117.
Day three of jury selection for the Karen Reed murder trial coming up short. 12 jurors officially seated, with four more needed before opening statements can begin.
Good morning, Ms. Reed.
Judge Beverly Cannoni asking a jury pool of 52 if they'd heard of the case, 41 saying they have. About half of those people also admitting they've already formed an opinion, and eight with a bias. Legal experts say some familiarity with the case isn't necessarily a reason for a juror disqualification.
Just because you've heard about the case doesn't mean that you are automatically excluded or you can't be sat as a juror. You really, at the end of the day, just need to be able to say, I've heard this, I understand generally what the case is about, but I'm able to keep an open mind. And that's those decisions that are made with the judge's sidebar.
Reed and her legal team leaving court for the last time this week.
Pleased with the way the choices are going.
So far, so good. So far, so good.
With supporters once again outside wearing the color pink.
You know, they're going through the process, and what we need is a fair and impartial jury.
New documents also filed in court on Thursday, including this notice of discovery by the state, which refers to DNA testing from Bodie Technologies. The lab results are connected to a piece of hair that was discovered on Reed's SUV after O'Keefe was found dead. Also in the paperwork, Reed's attorneys arguing for a fair cross-examination of Trooper Michael Proctor, the lead state police investigator on the case. The state has argued they don't want a jury to know he's under an internal affairs investigation for his handling of the case, but Reed's attorneys firing back. Quote, the fact that Trooper Michael Proctor is facing potential professional disciplinary action precisely because of his conduct in this case means that he has a personal interest in the outcome of these proceedings and necessarily also has a bias and prejudice against Ms. Reed. Again, 16 jurors are needed, so four more to go. Now, because there is no jury selection process slated for Fridays, this entire process will continue again on Monday. We're live here in Dedham. I'm Kirsten Glavin, NBC 10 Boston.
All right, the process continues next week. Kirsten, thank you. Back in studio now, we have our legal analyst, Michael Coyne, and our Sue O'Connell, who has been in court over the past 3 days. We're going to get into those court filings that Kirsten was talking about very soon. I have many questions, but we're going to start with the jury selection process. So, Sue, you warned yesterday about this thinning of the jury pool and what that could mean by the end of the day, and I think it proved to be true.
Yeah, as Michael, I'm sure, will affirm, court watchers and people who work in the court system say that as the week goes on, the number in the pool diminishes just automatically. That's why we don't have jury pool on Friday, because who wants to go to the jury on a Friday, right? Right. So you're going to kick it. But also what was interesting is that the number of people who raised their hand and said, I've heard about the case. I've read about the case. A friend or family has member has. The percentage of people has been increasing that are saying that. Also, people who are saying I've already made up my mind or I have a bias. So as I think it's going to get a little bit difficult as we're doing shows like this and the trial has started, people, if they're paying attention, they're going to know about the case. That does not disqualify them.
Right.
You know, that's from serving. But it just is interesting. And each time when the question's asked and all the hands go up, everyone laughs because it's like, of course, you know.
You've been tweeting about this, Sue, and I've been following you on that. So we'll share one of those tweets with our audience. And at the same time, I'll ask Michael Coyne to talk about the process from here going forward. We're going to get to 16. They will all listen to the testimony, but only 12 of them will deliberate?
Yes, that's correct. You have four alternates then, so that if during the process of the trial someone gets sick or they've got an emergency at work or somewhere else where they cannot continue, one of the alternates will then slot in. If at the end of this process we have our 12 jurors still intact, then they will be the only people deliberating and hearing the resolution of the matter in arriving at a decision. Those four will likely still, the four alternates will still be kept in case something happens during deliberation. But other than that, they will not participate.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the potential evidence they will hear. We saw in Kirsten's reporting that there is some DNA evidence that the state would like to introduce. Apparently some kind of DNA found on the back of Karen Reed's SUV. I don't suppose we know exactly who it belongs to, but what do we know about it so far?
Well, the likelihood is the government wouldn't be introducing it if it didn't belong to the decedent. And so what they want to do is connect the vehicle, the back of that vehicle, with Mr. O'Keefe to show that that's likely how he met his end. And the DNA evidence becomes incredibly important. You know, we refer to it these days as the CSI effect. The jury has seen enough of these TV shows. They want to see the connection medically, scientifically, between what you're saying took place and what actually took place. And when you don't have that, the juries now start to question the strength of the case.
And of course, what the defense has been arguing in these pretrial motions is that there's some kind of law enforcement cover-up, mm-hmm. Sue. And there are people outside the courthouse who are protesting this fact every single day. But they're doing it in a unique way now to get within the buffer zone. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things going on here, Glenn. And I think it's important to remember that someone is dead, mm-hmm. right? Someone died tragically. And someone is on trial for that death. She may or may not have done it. There's a lot of tragedy that's happening in this courtroom. And then when you're outside and people are wearing pink and happy to see each other and honking their horns, it's as if there's no tragedy that's
unfolding
here. Yeah,
there's a contradiction there. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, of course, the buffer zone idea was to try to insulate the jurors from, you know, being exposed to opinion when they're going in and maybe getting something in their mind. So people have been wearing pink instead of carrying Karen Reed, free Karen Reed signs, right? So what has happened is it's turned into a bit of a celebration, as you can see, where people are happy to see each other, cheering Karen, which is their right, and they're able to do
Absolutely.
It. But the festival part of it and the circus part of it is now starting to creep up, and we're just in jury selection. You know, one of my colleagues at another station inadvertently wore a pink shirt today to work in the courtroom, and you would have thought that he had come out and been standing up with a bias that he said he believed, and he just accidentally did it.
Yeah.
And the craziness that's already happening from the outside agitators, again, they can be very upset about what they think is happening. They can be upset about law enforcement overreach or cover-up. All of those things are legitimate. But the celebratory aspect of this is really starting to get under my skin.
And Glenn, for those who have never been to that courthouse, it is a very small courthouse.
Yes.
And that's what makes this problem that Sue has just talked about even worse.
Well, you know what's so interesting in this part of our discussion is that the threshold to hear potential evidence outside of the courtroom is far different than the threshold to get evidence introduced in court. So we saw in Kirsten's report that Trooper Michael Proctor, the state trooper who is the lead investigator in this case, is under internal investigation. Our investigation unit knows that that's related to the Karen Reed case. The question now is, should the jury hear that information?
No, not yet. The fact is, we don't admit arrests of individuals. We don't admit pending disciplinary actions generally. And the reason for that is nothing has been established yet. It's an allegation until proven. And so at the minimum, you'd have to have an outcome to that decision to make it relevant such that it could be admissible in evidence. The fact is people make allegations all the time that ultimately turn out to be untrue. So it wouldn't make sense for the jury to hear it and then turn out they have to be instructed at a later point, oh, disregard it, that was not of any consequence, because juries don't disregard evidence once they hear it.
We could continue this conversation for 30 minutes, but we have 6 to 8 weeks, so we'll see you soon. Michael Coyne, Sue O'Connell, thank you very much. Tomorrow, we'll dig a bit deeper into the behavior of law enforcement in this case, an aspect that is making this trial so unique. Our coverage of the Karen Reed trial will continue tomorrow night, right here at 7 o'clock. You can also find all of our reports and previous editions of Canton Confidential right now on our website, NBC10Boston.com. Just click on the tab at the top of the page labeled Karen Reed. Stay with us. More news and weather is right after this break.